Hello, Brady. Welcome to 100 Year Real Estate Investor. We're your hosts, Jake and Gino, and this is the show dedicated to long-term personal financial engineering. Gino, how's it going?
Jake, I'm doing great today. How are you doing?
Always making it happen, big man. Today's guest is the founder and CEO of Conti Capital and a thought leader in the multifamily industry. Named most admired CEO by the business, by the Dallas Business Journal. He is passionate about building strong core values, proven systems, and adept teams that sustain and create more success. If that doesn't sound like a small giant, I don't know what does. I'm excited about that. So without further ado, Carlos Vaz, welcome to the show.
Hey guys, well, thank you very much for having me here. It's an honor to be here for y'all.
Thank you.
Hey, it is our pleasure. And let's just get to know each other a little bit. Let's take it back and just tell us how you started in your multifamily journey.
Oof, it's a long story. I'll make it short. Have been in the U.S. now 22, almost 23 years. Was born in Brazil originally. I'm one of nine kids, number eight of nine. My dad was a butcher, my mom a homemaker. So if you're walking, you can walk. That's my house with my dad. Used to go to the farm at the age of seven, started going to law school in Brazil. Then I came to the U.S. for a law internship, a non-paid law internship. My first job was work from 2 a.m. to 6 at a newspaper warehouse, 8 to 3 at the law office, TGI Fridays over the weekend, and going to school during the night. Moving forward, started getting involved in construction, doing all the labor jobs. The first Conti was created, Conti Construction. Conti is my mom's maiden name. It was a Conti Vaz, so let's keep that alive. The first one was created, doing some constructions, learning. Then the second phase was created, the Conti Group, to buy and flip homes. It's still in a greater Boston area. Did that one very successfully. Came to early 2007. That's too good to be true. I always say that approach success very carefully, because success can be the most deceiving thing that you have in your life, can make you blind. Sold everything that I have in May of 2007. Started learn about multifamily. Came to Dallas in August of 2007. I moved here in September of 2007. Bought my first multifamily in 2008. From 2008 to now, have done over 12,000 units, a little bit over 1.5 billion transactions. We never lost any money for investors. And they're laser focused on people, performance, and making things better, making it happen. That's
making it. Making it happen. I love it, because so much of what we do is business building and systems and scale. And I think so many people in the multifamily space lose sight of that. So how did values and systems shape the formation of your company?
Jake, it's everything. I mean, it's everything. I mean, you guys are spot on. For you and Gino talk about this here, forget real estate. At the end of the day, it's about company culture, right people, process. Real estate is just a product.
Yep.
You don't have a very active company culture that you can be on the same page, right? If you can have that, if you're not able to build trust, you don't have healthy conflicts. If you don't have healthy conflicts, you don't have commitment. If you don't have commitment, there's no accountability, there's no results. So I believe that number one, company culture is the most important thing. It's the greatest competitive advantage that a company can have. Number two is your people, right? Then you can have the people, and then we're able to execute. Because ultimately, I believe that Peter Drucker was right. People are not afraid of your ideas, but of your capacity to execute.
Ooh. It's so interesting go ahead, Gino.
I want to jump in real quick. I'm sorry and to interrupt you, but what I want to know is, Carlos, in 2007, what made you sell everything in 2007? Looking back, you're a genius. Was it just luck where you just burned out? Or is it the next sign of anything? What made it, and are there any parallels to what's going on in this part of the market cycle right now?
Sure, Gina. And you're not alone. People are asking that question too, right? I always say that all the time, right? Success can be the most deceiving teacher that you have in life, right? Because you do one, say, okay, this went well. You do a next one, hey, that one. By the time you get to number 7 or 10, you start to cut corners. And that's where you're going to get punched big time, right? The most impactful thing that a CEO or a founder can have is this discomfort with comfort, right? You need to have a discomfort of comfort all the time. If things seem to be too well, so there's much of something wrong. So if I go back in 2007, this is what was happening. everyone that I knew was getting to buying single family homes to trying to do these flips. When you look at fundamentals, Boston was not growing. Show me the data. That's the beauty about data. The good deal is the one I look at the data, you look and I say, Carlos, that's a good deal. The bad deal is that I look at the data, I need to prove to you that's a good deal. Because the numbers, you look at the numbers.
You're pencil whipping it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you look at 2007, what was happening? Everybody got into the business. Boston was not growing. And I need 100% finance to buy a house and 100% to sell the house. Any business, you know, if you depend on one thing 100%, you don't have a business. You have a time bomb. So this is not going to do well. And back then, I was still my own loan officer. I remember some of the mortgages were taking longer to close. It was a Tuesday. I was in my house doing some numbers. Say, hold on a second. If I were not able to sell these houses, I need to hold, right? So what's the worst can happen? Well, the worst can happen is that my rent is not going to cover the mortgage. I'm negative big time. I don't have money. I cannot be feeding this beast. I need to get out. It was more like, really fundamentals of the market.
And so, Carlos, why did you transition into multifamily from there? What made you get into multifamily?
Well, multifamily. So what happened back then, I had some friends in Boston. They had multifamily. And as we were talking, I said, Carlos, why don't you get into multifamily? You have done all the things related. It will be natural for you. It makes a lot of sense. I said, well, it's interesting, but let me go learn first. Just listen to yourself. Some of the points that you're making here makes a lot of sense to me. I'm a student for life. I mean, I was studying and learning. So when people mentioned to me multifamily, the first thing I did, right? Well, let me go learn. I love that saying. If you think education is expensive, try ignorance. I've tried my own ignorance. I don't want to go back again. I want to get my CCIM. I'm a huge fan of CCIM or anyone who, I mean, learn to commercial real estate, start learning about my CCIM. And what CCIM unit 2 that I'm looking at, multipliers, what happened when a market is growing, that brought me to Dallas. And I knew I wanted to do multifamily.
Thank you.
It's interesting. I was on the phone with our banker yesterday and he said that they pulled more loans in the last loan committee than he's seen in the last 10 years. So some of these banks are tightening up. How do you see the state of the market for multifamily currently?
It is changing very fast. I mean, you need to be, it's the idea, right? Don't think that, I mean, perhaps a misconception people has about multifamily or real estate in general, is, oh, it's for the long term. Yes, but multifamily and real estate, you're part of the financial market. You need to be constantly adapting, constantly, right? If the things are changing, if you're able to get a Fannie Mae loan and Fannie Mae is holding now, you're gonna be in trouble. So you need to be constantly adapting. So one thing that we did for the last 3 years, we brought our leverage down big time. Our leverage is always 60% or lower. So let's be more conservative because I don't know what's going to happen. Also, I don't want to get any floater or anything that there's no cap.
Think of the bridge loans last year that people were doing to make stabilized deals work. To your point.
If you don't have a cap, good luck. I might be talking to you. If you don't have a cap, hey, how are you doing, Jake? Our acquisition team is going to be calling you. You cannot. That's the fundamentals, right? You look at the market now. The market shifted very fast. You went from
very fast.
You went from mortgages. I look at our fund 3. Our fund 3, we have a Fannie Mae 10-year below 3% fixed.
Yeah,
unbelievable, right? Right now, it's over 5%. It's a big shift, right? So now, what do you happen here? And also, this notion of having double-digit rent growth. It's interesting, but you cannot do an underwriting, a 5 years underwriting that, hey, am I going to get 15%?
Carlos, the same guys buying the bridge last year that I mentioned were underwriting at 20% year over year rent growth. So, you know, these are the things that we're seeing. And it's ultimately like we're in the same boat as you. We always are looking to take rate risk off the table. So everything in our portfolio, we lock it up for 10 years. We, you know, when we send it out to Fannie Freddie, whatever we do at that point. So we don't have anything coming due to, I think, 2027 at the earliest. And people in the last couple of years were like, no, you got to buy bridge. That's how you're going to make the deals work. I don't want to make the deals work. Okay. If it doesn't work, That's fine, because ultimately I don't want floating rates. I don't want rate risk. We want to remove rate risk, take it off the table, send it out to 10 years, stagger this stuff. That's what we've done. And I feel like, leading up now we look smart, but a year ago, we were kind of almost being ridiculed about it.
You and I mean,
I'm just saying, like, it's important. Yeah.
There were fights that I had, almost fights in a good way, of some of our investors saying, why don't you get more leverage? They say, no, it's insane. Don't get more leverage because you need to be conservative. I mean, you don't know. Say, but everybody.
Now they're saying, I was just kidding with you, Carlos, right? We were just kidding.
Yeah. So it's more like, oh, now it's the whole idea, right? I think our obligations, right? When we look at ourselves, right? Number one, we need to be good stewards. We need to be the best stewards for those investments. It's a big responsibility when you work with third-party money. Our money is already a big responsibility. So sometimes you're going to make decisions that for the outside might not be the best decisions, because why are you not taking more leverage? Because when you're looking inside, we're not looking at this deep. We're looking this deep. Hey, we're trying to see where that punch is going to come from somewhere, and let's make sure we're well-protected here, right?
Carlos, I love that analogy, because you're talking about long-termism. The show is about long-termism, and you're talking about, I'm not going to take a short-term risk of over-levering myself to please some of these people that have no idea about investing for the long-termism. What habits or rituals do you have, other than your thought processes, but what do you do as far as daily, weekly, yearly habits or rituals to continue to reinforce that long-termism?
First of all, you need to be constant learning, right? So you need to be kind of have this obsession about learning, about reinvent yourself, or what brought you here is not going to take you there, right? The loans that you're getting, sometimes some of our invest, I wish I can get the over 20% return. And I said, I wish I had a machine that I can go back in time and buy those deals, but that doesn't happen. So those 20% return,
that's right,
it's not going to happen here. So if you have a way, have fun, but it's not going to be on us. So I think on that one, Gino, you need to be really have this lifelong learner mindset, always learning. Also, it's very important that you, as your team, as your company, you share that same mindset. Otherwise, it becomes one person trying to push this year and 20 people trying to push you back, right? I think we, as a company, we need to have the same mindset that, hey, what brought you here is not going to be able to take you there. Also, I never want to be in a position that I'm the smartest person in the room. And every person that we always exchange ideas. I think my job today, I always say, right, as a CEO and founder, right, number one is to keep our company culture very flat and live up to those values. Number two, to attract talent, to give opportunity to talent grow, right, and to retain talent. Because talent to me is the most important thing that any company can do today after company culture. And the third one is looking for those opportunities that can help us to get the bigger growth, right? So how can I help the team to grow there? But when you look at here for us as a company, Gino, it's this learning is giving space to people to challenge us, right? So imagine you have someone that you hire and someone, hey, Gino, that's a great idea. Let me share some thoughts with you. I think it might be a better approach. And then you call Jake, this guy's awesome. He's taking us to a place we never even thought before. That's openness that we have to have as a company.
Mm-hmm. That's really great. So along those same lines, in my journey as a multifamily entrepreneur, I almost feel like every 2 to 3 years, there's a new inflection point or major learning that has taken place. Going back to how you described your company and the vision, the systems and the culture, has there ever been talk about building an enduring organization and what that looks like? Because it's clear that you guys focus a lot on business building and creating that well-oiled machine.
100%. I mean, if you look at a company, I mean, we're a huge EOS fan. We use EOS a lot.
I love it. We EOS scaling up, you name it, we buy it. So
EOS, huge EOS fan, huge Pat Colantuoni fan, huge John Wooden fan, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, we had our summit this year, and Lou Holtz was a keynote speaker, right? Great person. So we have that 1, 3, and 10 year plan. So we know what I said. Listen, this is what we're trying to do, right? The most important thing is not the 10 year plan. It's not the 3 year plan. It's not the 1 year plan. is those the quarter, is those 90 days, right?
The quarterly priorities, baby. He's speaking the language, Gino.
That's it. Guys, if we need to have less than 5 goals, everything else is noise. Let's stay laser focus. Let's stay here and let's go. Hey, that's noise. That's not related to this quarter. I think because the moment you get so laser focused on this year, you start to get that small results. And of course, you want to get to the 10-year vision. You need to say where we're going here, right? But everything we do as a company, look at our lender. We have been working with the same lender for almost 11 years. So that gives that's our relationship, right? I call them, we can get anything done less than 45 days. So to me, that's important. And I never see them as a third party. They're a part of the company, right?
Yeah.
So everything that you do, Jake, on this, if you don't look into where you want to be, and another thing that's very important, as you think where you're going to be, making sure that you're trying to understand where you want to be, because by the time you get there, it might be the last place you want to stay. Mm-hmm. So these decisions we do on these 90 days, it matters the most, right?
Carlos, it appears that you've been really successful. You haven't lost money for investors. I really want you to share a story about a deal that you bought that maybe you shouldn't have bought it, or maybe you brought you a lot of pain. We say ROE, it's return on effort. Not just return on equity, but it's return on effort. You might have still made a 12% IRR on that deal, but you're like, why did I buy that deal? Can you share some learning lessons with us?
Of course, we all have those. We all have those, right? You go there, I always say Mike Tyson was right, right? Everything works until you get a punch in the face, right? I remember.
I love the boxing analogies. Yes.
Yeah. I'm going to take him down. Of course I will.
Damn, that hurt more than I thought it would.
So it's, that's a great question, Gino. 2009, I remember where there was one deal looking in Dallas that we were buying from a bank, and we're buying this deal. Now, look at impressed. I was buying this deal for 20% of the note value. Boom. I said, I'm like, 20% of the notes.
Can't miss on this.
Exactly. You cannot, come on. This is so cheap, right?
This is free. They're giving me the keys.
By the time you're getting deals below 10,000 per unit, right? Then, you get involved, right? Then, of course, you talk about this flat roof deal that you get into this property and that location. This deal, when you bought this deal, the first aha moment, right? You start to walk in the property, and the next day they break into a leasing office. So within, I would say, about 60 days, we have an incident that someone went on top of our flat roof with a chainsaw, cut a hole, got inside of the units to steal copper pipe, and then have all the water damage, that lovely water damage. Then you're gonna looking for a property manager, right? You said, Carl, I have this great property. This is us.
I said, chainsaw massacre land.
Yes. And then it starts to talk to the property manager and it said, she's applying for the position. So where's the address again? Oh, it's this place. Oh, no.
Click.
No. So I'm like, oh, and then if you say, no, what if I pay you more? Then, okay, I'll give you 20% more. Great. They're not last. About 60 days. In the first year of this property, I have 4 different managers. Picture that you have a company. In the first year, you have 4 different CEOs. How the heck are you able to get execution? So that's a deal we had to put. I said, listen, shut down. We're not buying anything anymore. We need to fix the house. We need to go there. Everything caring, everything, work with the property managers, trying to see how things work. I went to realize much later, this deal is that gives me a notion that we'll never buy, now we're ready to change again, but we'll never buy properties when we have a median household income below $50,000. This one, it was $27,000.
There comes the criteria and the systemizations and the
two words, median income, everybody.
And I learned something very quickly. You always fix a property. You never fix neighborhoods, and that's it. And we didn't lose money on this one, Gino. But boy, it's because
you lost some sleep and you lost some hair.
A lot of sleep. Yeah. I lost a lot of hair, and it's the sweat that comes in, right? And
it's hot in Texas. Yeah.
Yeah, and that was a huge learning lesson.
So it's interesting, you know, you're kind of talking about these great team members that you bring on, and they come with these really good ideas and whatnot. And then you're also referencing an investor pushing you to lever up or, you know, buy more. Any experience with a blend of that where you've had, you know, team members come on and say, Carlos, we got to buy this deal. What about a little bridge here? And they start, you know, because they're looking for that rip or they're looking for that get rich quick mentality. Any experience with that? And if so, how have you handled it?
For a team member, right? If you look at a team member, hey, this is a great deal. It's not that it's a show me the numbers. We have a whole investment committee. There's actually six people investment committee from CEO, COO, CFO, right? VP of asset manager, VP of investor relation, and VP of acquisitions, right? So the question is, if you have one of your team members, that's a big difference between understand a system and understand a process. If you have one of your team members, hey, Carlos, this is a great deal. Let's go buy. I think we can do some financial engineering, right? Because to me, that's more a problem for core values as a company than deal itself. So our position
100%. Yes.
Our position as a company, there's going to be a point that your team members are going to be making decisions that you're not going to be able to see. That's life, right? It's like our kids, right? I have three. At some point, my kids are going to make decisions. I'm not going to be next to them. They're going to make by themselves. I only ask to make the best decisions possible. For my team members, if you're pushing this year, most likely you're not aligned to our core values. You're going to be out of the door. I mean,
and sometimes it's just not a good fit, and that's okay too.
Exactly. It's okay. It's okay because to me, that's the most important thing. When you see something, is this aligned to the company? Is the best thing for the company? If it is, we're moving. If it's not, you're just trying to make it work. Our company is not for you. You're going to be out.
Jake, do you mind if I do a quick recap of this podcast before we let
Carlos... I thought you were going to start singing to him, but yeah, sure, that's great.
No, I'm not warmed up right now because I think everyone, to me, it's been an amazing show, short, but I want everyone to go check Carlos out. But to recap a story like this, I mean, he's been here for 23 years. One of nine children. He's number eight of number nine. That's amazing. He started out with Conti Construction. Then from Conti Construction, went to the Conti Group. And then in 2007, saw that things weren't right and said, I'm going to start all over. How many of us out there have the courage and the guts to do that? Very few of us have it because we're comfortable. And talking about being successful,
that's right.
And that success sometimes makes you fall asleep. And I think what Carlos is doing out there, everybody, he's not building a portfolio or a business. He's building people to build the portfolio or the business. That's the clear delineation of what I think long-termism really is. He's not about the shiny object. He's not out there pencil whipping deals. He's not out there trying to chase an IRR. He's out there trying to chase culture, core values, and he's a visionary. He's a leader, but he's also got a little bit of integrator in him as well because he started out with boots on the ground. He was a construction guy. And then ultimately what I'll lead you with, Jake, is it's hard work. This is not a four-hour work week BS kind of thing. He's worked in it. He's done all the hard work. He's worked at TGI Fridays. I had a restaurant. Restaurants suck. But they promote hard work. So when you really get hard work and you really get investors knocking down your doors and you got people cutting your roofs with chainsaws, you're ready to go. You know what to happen. You're not going to curl up in the fetal position and say, hey, it's all about me. It's all about responsibility. And it's all about long-termism. I mean, I can't believe it took us this long to meet Carlos Vaz, Jake. What the heck, man? Where have we been? We should have met Carlos Vaz.
Thank you, Gino. I think that you said something I mentioned yesterday to one of our investors when I was in Austin, right? Hey, you know who I am. If things go sour, this year doesn't mean I know I'm going to get my other shirt. I'm going to go on site. And guys, what do you need? Let's go. I'm here to help. I think that ultimately we are a combination of the values that we live our life on a daily basis, that we run our companies, that we interact with anyone as a society, as a community, and that's who we are. To me, I'm not able to wake up in the morning and say, today I'm going to have more integrity or less integrity. Some things in life are flat line. That's who I am. That's how we make it happen.
I got a couple of things here before we wrap up. Let me start with the first thing. If I was an investor, I would want to give you my money. And I'll tell you why in a second. So how can folks get a hold of you? What's the website?
Our website is contecapital.com.
Okay. And here's the reason. We've interviewed hundreds of investors, mm-hmm. you know, minimum, maybe thousands, maybe hundreds. I've never felt this much alignment on the importance of values, values-based decision-making, company culture, and systems that I have had in this short interaction with you. So hats off to you, because I believe, much like you do, and I can tell that it's everything. It's 100%. It's a business. You need to treat it like one. And I just want to say that I also resonate with you on the 2 to 6 a.m. because like yourself, I had a job at UPS where I'd work from 2 a.m. to 6 a.m. doing the grunt work. And then I went and did a commission-based sales job for the rest of the day. So, hey, respect the hustle. You're killing it out there. Man, really enjoyed this one. Thank you so much for your time today. Gang, as always, we believe in buying deals for the long term. Think in decades. I'm Jake. He's the G Daddy. And he's the Carlos Daddy. He's the man down there. So we had a good one today. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Carlos.
I appreciate it. Thank you.